Hi, this is Jay Sherbrooke, DO, professor and diabetologist at Torrey University, California. Today we're going to continue our series on practical use of insulin in primary care, and we're doing our program here at the American Diabetes Association 77th Scientific Sessions in San Diego, California. I'm happy today to have Carlos Campos, MD, primary care diabetologist from South Central Texas, with us to talk about cultural issues and cultural barriers for the Hispanic population in diabetes. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you.
So maybe to start, can you just tell us a little bit about your practice?
Sure. I've been in practice in New Braunfels, Texas, which is right between San Antonio and Austin, for the last 34 years. The first 15 years, I did everything from deliver babies to see people in a nursing home to the whole, what I call the womb-to-tomb practice. The last 15 years, I have morphed into a diabetologist. I really enjoyed and became really interested in diabetes.
Wow, and so you certainly have lots of expertise then. The makeup of your practice, what's the kind of ethnic and racial practice look like?
I grew up in a little German town, and that's where I practice. And it's about, right now, it's about 60% Hispanic, about 40% non-Hispanic white.
Okay. And so as an academic physician, I read the literature, I write things, but I also have patients. And so one of the things I kind of have a question about is, when do I use Hispanic, when do I use Latino, both in terms of care and in practice?
Yeah. If you look at the literature that that looks at cultural competency and they discuss Hispanic, Latinos, that those terms are always brought together, Hispanic and Latinos. Hispanic really refers to that population that shares the same language, which happens to be Spanish. And Latino really refers to the geographic area where the population's from. So, for example, Spaniards would be considered Hispanic, but not Latinos. People from Brazil would be considered Latinos, but not Hispanic, because they speak Portuguese in Brazil. So in the literature, it's always you'll always see that coupled together, Hispanic / Latinos.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about when you're working in your practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I moved from Ohio to California, and the demographic of my practice changed a lot. What advice would you give me if I want to engage my Hispanic Latino population?
Yeah, there's about three things that I really focus in when I give talks on cultural competency. And one of them is the importance of language and the whole issue with that really culture shapes everything. So things of nutrition and the importance of family in that culture. And so certainly if you're a physician that or a provider that sees a large amount of Hispanic Latino patients that and if you don't speak the language, get people in your practice that do to help facilitate that. And then the other big issue is the issue with family and the family values that culture has. And we need to make it easier when patients come in is to bring their families in. Because as we do that, when we bring the families in, we are able to develop a trust and a relationship with the patient, and they're more apt to do the strategies that we have to better control them. So families are really, really important that we make room in our exam rooms to have more than just one or two chairs, things that that facilitate for families to come in and not see them as a barrier, but really see them as a plus for us.
And boy, that to me is a game changer. So is that something families would like?
Absolutely, and we often can use those families to help us better care for that patient, and to tell them, look, we need to help them with their nutrition, make sure they take their medicines, and give them that ease with if we have to use insulin to be able to use insulin.
So focusing on that family issue. So if I have a patient, and I ask them to bring their family, and they come. Mm-hmm. At what point am I talking to the patient? At what point am I talking to the family? And how do I do that in a way that's meaningful to them,
yes,
and not disrespectful?
I think that's a very good question. Is that remember certainly the patient will always be first. If you don't speak Spanish, you're going to use an interpreter to help you with that. But often what I often will do is that as a patient comes in and the family member there, we know that if the patient has diabetes, chances are the family members are going to have diabetes. So incorporate all your discussions with the family members and see if they've ever been diagnosed or even been checked for diabetes. I'll often will say, hey, you know your dad's got this. If you have a parent that has diabetes, your risk of having diabetes is about 40%. If you have both of them have diabetes, it's a little over 75%. So we really need to check you. We'll try to catch those patients early.
How about involving the children? You know, one of the things I found to be a very useful tool is to say, this is important not only for you, but your children. How do you do that?
Well, you know, Again, that part of that, knowing that what is their risk of developing diabetes as they go along, and often do it with diet. And I think that's the other component that we talk about too is the whole issue of nutrition in that culture. Often when I talk to other providers about cultural competency and nutrition, I think they really are surprised to know, for example, that one 10-inch flour tortilla will have the equivalency of about 10 teaspoons of sugar. Kind of blows people's minds sometimes. Mm. And so if you're talking about slamming down two breakfast tacos, we're not even talking about what's inside the taco. We're talking about just the tortilla itself. That's 10 teaspoons of sugar. That's 20 teaspoons of sugar if you're doing two. And so even though we want our patients to enjoy their culture, we need to make some modification. We don't tell them that they can't eat tortillas. Mm. We tell them to sort of modify. Maybe instead of eating flour tortillas all the time, then maybe to do some corn tortillas. Now we're talking about 2 or 3 teaspoons of sugar. Mm. So really decreasing their glucose burden and just making some adjustments. Not saying they can never eat that. It's just that there are things that they can do to modify. The other big issue is refried beans, going from refried beans to boiled beans. Mm. And we tell them to add that hot sauce in there because all those ingredients are great stuff. But then again, that really cuts down on the amount of fat that they do. And then especially for children is the whole issue of the licuados that our patients do. I mean, they will drink, whether they think it's mango or coconut, and they think it's healthy, but it's loaded full of sugar. I often just refer to it as liquid candy. Mm. And so we talk about just maybe doing other substitutes besides that.
Yeah, boy, I think that's so important because I think people drink juice because they think it's healthier than soda. And then I'd say, well, actually, there's still a lot of sugar in that. And so I think, you know, addressing that juice is important in the culture, maybe saying, okay, you know, tortilla, right?
Yes.
Beans, you can still have beans, but there's ways to adjust it. And so I think those are really important things.
I often tell providers, it's like when you walk into a room and if the room is flooded, what do? Do you grab a bucket or a mop? No, you go to see where the leak is and turn the leak off. And most of the time in our patients, the leak is that they're overwhelming themselves with carbs. And so if you can make that adjustment, it really helps to control their blood sugars.
Oh, boy, that's great. So you talked a little bit about, you know, certainly engage in the language of the patient. And that's important. If you don't know the language, make sure you have a team of people that can help you with that. Two, address the family and let the family be part of that care. And then three, look at ways to engage nutrition is not only a way to treat diabetes, but to prevent diabetes and make it something the family can engage in.
Exactly. And then the other thing about the language is also the language that we as providers use. I think we often use insulin as a punishment for the patient. Mm. You know, we'll say, you know, if you don't do what we tell you to do, if you don't do this, you know, we're eventually going to have to put you on insulin. And then when it's time to put the patient on insulin, they often see that as a punishment. When all we're doing, and when I talk about insulin to patients, is often we'll say, you know, sometimes we're hoping that that you live long enough to need insulin. Mm. And all we're doing when we give you insulin is giving you back that natural hormone that your body should be making. That insulin is a state of, or diabetes is a state of insulin deficiency. And so we have to, I think, be careful of how we use our language when we use medications like insulin to make it more palatable for that patient in that culture.
And you find your patients are willing to consider insulin?
If we talk about it early on, knowing that there's going to come a time where you might need insulin, don't be afraid of that. You know, it's just a natural hormone that your body's deficient in, and we might need to use it down the road. If we do that early on and walk patients through that, they're more apt to be able to take it.
Wow. Well, these are really important things you shared with me and you shared with the Medscape community. So we thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.